Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.
What's poppin', people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in your ear holes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
I don't get this at all. I thought Low Pam was shut up, Mr. Burton. You were not brought upon this world to get it.
On today's episode, we will be talking about Everything Everywhere All at Once. This is a 2022 film directed by the Daniels and stars Michelle Yeoh, Stephanie Hsu, and Jamie Lee Curtis. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. A middle-aged Chinese immigrant is swept up into an insane adventure in which she alone can save existence by exploring other universes and connecting with the lives she could have led. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
Everything, everywhere, all at once. Cooley eyes, big surprise, bagels for your lunch. Martial arts, butt plugs, boulders in the sand. Raccoon chef, cockfights, hot dogs on your hands. E-E-A-A-O-E-E-A-O. Laundrette, stapled heads, dog nunchucks. Profound realization, our life suck. A thousand Evelyns, a thousand joys. Loving boss with lots of sex toys.
Let's start with some facts about the film. All the VFX for this film was done by 9 people, including the 2 directors. The majority of the shots were done by a core group of 5 people. None of the VFX team went to school for VFX. They were all friends who taught themselves with tutorials they found online for free. Don't just stare at me, you have to respond to that fact.
Sorry. I was listening to the numbers, 9 and 5 and stuff, and I thought you were going to keep going further down. There was 9 people that did VFX by a group of 5, a core team of 5, then edited by 2 and mastered by 1.
Yeah. So what do you think of that fact?
It's cool. I like the fact they taught themselves on YouTube and through tutorials, because that makes me think I can do it.
That
I can do it.
That's why I include it, because it's a lovely thing to have in such a successful film, just to be safe in the knowledge that if you want to do something, you put your mind to it and you can achieve it.
Yeah.
This has become a motivational podcast, just like that.
That's amazing, though. I think it's like when you hear that certain actors didn't go to drama school and stuff, and they're huge, hugely successful. It's almost like, wow, that guy like literally was a carpenter, or he worked in Asda. But he had the knack, and he had the right time, right day, right opportunity, and someone picked him up. So when you hear that 9 guys were stoned, doing drugs, eating food and doing VFX.
Well, you added that stuff in.
Is that not a fact?
Well, there's nothing here to say that they were stoned or munching or on drugs, but...
Well, let's not focus on the little things.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's an amazing fact, and it makes me optimistic about my desire to become an animator, so I can create my own little animation shows online and not have anyone involved. Not even you.
I think it's... Oh, cheers. I think it's a wonderful world we live in. I know I'm quite a cynical person, but when you look at a fact like that and know that there's just such a wealth of information out there, that if you're willing to put in the time and the effort, you can learn anything.
Yeah.
I mean, look at us doing this podcast. Like, there was a time we would not know
all
how to
online.
Record... Exactly. We wouldn't know how to record a thing. We wouldn't know how to do... I mean, you're a musician, but make the songs, edit the podcast episodes themselves. We've learned all that.
Yeah.
So...
I think that is probably the greatest thing about the internet, that there is this treasure trove of information out there, and you can go and teach yourself things. You know, if I can't sleep, I'm sitting there reading about how the first rocking chair, where'd it come from? Where was the first beer brewed? Egypt. You know, it's just...
Is it really?
Like, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Potentially. I know it was a Middle Eastern country,
yeah,
but I wouldn't want to put my finger on it, just in case.
For me, though, the film is an impressive spectacle to look at, and to know that there's a team behind the film, the way it looks visually, that learned how to do this, not through a college degree, not through years of experience, not through working their way up, just a group of mates that looked at it and was like, I'd love to learn how to do this, and they did it, and was successful. And the fact that the film itself is up for like best editing. Imagine that. You taught yourself to do something with VFX and then you're
doing VFX for probably the most difficult film to do VFX for.
Well, it's mad, isn't it?
Well, it's a cut every like 2-3 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine learning VFX online with 9 people and you're like, you're coming in ground level. You're like, okay, how does VFX work? Where do we even start? And the first film you do it on, at least I assume it's the first film they've done it on, or it's the first big film they've done it on, is just a ridiculous amount of scenes and actions and special effects, dildos and flying wobbly things. It's in total insanity.
Yeah, must be amazing to see their attempts being applauded by the highest of accolades, like Oscar nominated, learning stuff online and then being highly regarded enough to get Oscar nominated must be the most incredible feeling.
They'll all start getting whacked soon because the VFX guys that have been in the industry for 40, 50 years just start popping them off one by one. They're down to 6, down to 5, down to 2. Then the guy who mastered it all just gets 2 in the head. They just kill them off because if anyone can do it, they're no longer valuable.
I'd watch that.
As a film.
What would you call it? VFX Vengeance.
I call it 9 Reasons to Survive.
Okay.
That's a terrible name.
I quite like it. In one universe that was not used in the film, Evelyn is a piece of sentient spaghetti being cooked in a pot. She has a son who is a piece of elbow macaroni, eager to be the one thrown against the wall as a test of sticky doneness.
Can I put my hand
as
up?
This will show he has become a man.
Oh, sorry. Elbow macaroni?
Yeah.
The hell is that?
I'm assuming it's those little macaroni, the shape of macaroni, kind of looks like an elbow bend. I don't know.
Man, that's got me thinking about flaky skin and shiz.
Oh. But would you have liked to see the inclusion of a sentient spaghetti being in this film? Do you think it needed any more madness?
You could have said to me it was in it, and I'd believe you.
That much craziness going on that you think some went over your head?
You can't watch that film and take in every bit of madness of the 2 hours and 12 minutes or however long it is. There's definitely things I've missed in this film. Yeah. If you would have said, what did you think about the spaghetti, elbow, macaroni, cheese head? I'd have been like, great. Or I don't recall.
Yeah. Big fan of the spaghetti. There was no spaghetti.
I think if you've got hot dog fingers, nothing shocks or surprises me that there was potentially room for sketty.
I would have liked to seen sketty. I like the idea that there was a piece of elbow macaroni that's life ambition was to be thrown at a wall to see if he sticks. And then if he stuck, that would mean he'd become a man.
I know spaghetti gets thrown at ceilings to see if it sticks and then it's done, isn't it? And then it's al dente, touch to the tooth. But macaroni elbow?
Wait, is that
a real... my nan had.
Is that... Well, my nan's been very ill with macaroni elbow.
Oh, what's that mean? Skin gets so dirt that it begins to cheddar itself.
Oh, nasty.
Yeah, no, it's true. You throw spaghetti on the ceiling, it means it's done. Or against the wall. Because the starch is just about perfect for al dente, isn't it?
So you're telling me that in Italian restaurants across the land, they're cooking a big pot of spaghetti and they're launching it at the walls to see if it's done?
No, I think it's more Mamma Italia, like Mamma Italia, like in a kitchen, an old kitchen, you know, at home. It's like home cooking thing.
Okay.
I don't think Gordon Ramsay throwing up on ceiling and then going up on ladder and getting it back down.
Yeah, I wouldn't be a fan of that. To keep details under wraps before the trailer was released, the official IMDb synopsis read, "A woman tries to do her taxes." Now, I know you're someone who prefers realism in films. Would you have preferred to watch a movie that was about a woman doing her taxes?
Don't confuse me saying I prefer realism in films, meaning I don't like far-fetched things. Lord of the Rings is far-fetched, but I like the realism in, would the sword take off an orc's head or would it not? Does it defy physics, is what I mean. Like Lord of the Rings, we know that cave trolls don't exist, etc. But if it fell, would it fall hard? Yes, it would. That's realism in physics. Okay. So I'm not put off by everything everywhere all at once. I've never been a fan of multiverse films.
Okay.
I find it annoying because none of it's grounded or based on any real hard evidence. And it's just like, it's all theorized. And I'm like, in a world where anything can happen, it's hard to care because it's kind of like anything can happen.
Yeah, I do see your point. I don't necessarily agree with it. But I think if it's a film that is unbelievable, but it sticks to one sort of trajectory, one lane, one narrative, I think you can buy into that unbelievability if it's just one story. Like you can leave belief at the door if it's, like you say, Lord of the Rings, if it's hugely scaled fantasy epic. You can ignore the fact that they have to take the ring to Mordor. There's orcs and huge spiders and flying wizards and all that shit. If the story is kept on one track, with something with a multiverse at its core, like you say, it can go anywhere. So there's no continuity. There's very little plot in a film.
And
like
almost
this.
No consequences.
Well, yeah, because like you say, everything is possible and anything can happen. And with that, it's almost an impossible scale to sort of keep the film level, because it's just bonkers to think where you could go.
This was just live action Rick and Morty for me.
Yeah.
Like,
but you like Rick and Morty.
I love Rick and Morty, but it's an animation and it's more about how crass and what an alcoholic he is. But I can still follow Rick and Morty more than I could follow this. And when you say that it was originally, so to obviously not let stuff leak, they said it's about a woman filing her tax returns.
The synopsis was originally, when this was in pre-production, was just a woman tries to do her taxes, and that gives nothing away.
And you asked me, I did it again. When you ask me a question sometimes, I go off because I really want to tell you something.
Okay.
And then I feel like just polite to me, man. You're just too polite.
Well, thank you. I'll take that as a compliment. But as I was just saying, because I know you prefer your realism. So if this was a really, I don't know how you would advertise a gritty, captivating film about woman doing her taxes, but on paper, would that be something that appeals to you more? If it had a great cast and a great director, if it was just that tiny tagline of a woman tries to do her taxes, would you be interested in that based on your sort of loyalty to realism? Or does the idea of the scale of multiverse or something as big as that, does that appeal to you more?
I'd probably rather watch the film about a woman doing her taxes.
I thought so, yeah.
I probably would. I mean, I like Erin Brockovich and stuff, and that's all about the boredom of like legalities and getting justice and stuff. But yeah, if you put them two puddings in front of me, there's already a dessert spoon in that tax return one.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I don't understand taxes or math. Or anything to do with numbers. So if I had a bonkers film synopsis on one side and a woman tries to do her taxes, I'm avoiding the tax film like a plague. I'm not interested.
Well, in the UK, tax essentially is that they own 20% of your labour.
You've lost me.
Well, if you pay 20% tax,
no.
The government owns 20% of your labour. To be a slave is to have 100% of your labour owned.
Okay, got a bit deep.
Yeah, it did.
What do you like about Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Hot dog finger universe.
Well, of course.
I just found, if this was a bit more on the straight and narrow and more of a comedy over just trying to melt my brain constantly, the way some of the comedy scenes are delivered in this, the hot dog finger with Jamie Lee Curtis when she ends up in the laundrette and they just end up touching each other's face and shouting. Yeah. I don't know. I liked the creative stuff behind the comedic scenes, and hot dog finger universe made me laugh. I wanted to see more of that universe.
Yeah.
Is it only their fingers?
Well, because you see her jamming on a piano with her toes. So I'm assuming
she's got hot dog toes.
No, she's got normal toes. Although the feet in that, no disrespect to Jamie Lee Curtis, those feet were minging. I don't know if they were her actual feet. I've got a bit of a thing against feet anyway. I think they're weird, the gross things. I don't understand why people have like foot fetishes and stuff. But she plays with her these gnarly little stubby beastie things. Well, and I'm just like,
ooh. I don't, it probably isn't her real feet. You think?
Why wouldn't it be?
I don't know.
I don't see her too proud to get her feet out.
Get her feet out.
I'm not sure. But you like the hot dog hand universe?
I mean, just mad. If I'm picking some likes, I liked that. I thought it looked funny. I thought it was, whoever thought of it is probably someone I'd like to sit and have a beer with.
Yeah.
Yeah, hot dog universe.
What did you think of the fingers started sort of like spurting out ketchup and mustard?
Jizzy.
Yeah, which I thought, are they climaxing through their fingers? Like,
I don't know, because there's the video of a couple singing to each other on a TV. Look, she likes in the normal world pre 32 minutes into the film. And then she sees the hot dog version and they're like spewing mustard and ketchup into each other's mouths.
Yeah, out of their fingers.
No one would believe this.
What do you mean?
I could say anything and you'll just be like, oh, it might have been in the film. Anything.
Well, I find that there's a sense of, I admire that about it. Like, you can put anything in there, and I completely understand what you're saying about it's so out there and anything's possible that it makes it impossible to focus on one thing. I do understand where you're coming from with that point, but I think I'm on the different side of the fence because I like the possibilities it can go.
But
it can be anything.
I didn't understand the scene where the person's shitting out coconut husks because it self-wipes as it comes out. I didn't get that at all.
Right, now your point is backed up there about it can be anything and I could say anything because I do not remember that in the film. Did you make it up?
Yeah, I went in.
Nice. I was close to going, do I admit that I don't know? And I was like, Coconut
this is
Hearts.
A great trap film. Isn't yeah. it? We could keep trapping each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God, I'm going to be.
I've got to be honest.
On watch, yeah.
Flipping back a little, a whittle, I don't recall the toe scene.
No?
No.
But it was straight off. So, in one of the many, many universes that are portrayed within the film, Jamie Lee Curtis and Michelle Yeoh's characters are together and they've got the hot dog fingers. And there's a few little snippets in the scene where they're like frustrated with their lack of being eight bones in their hands. They can't do stuff. So it shows them doing knitting with their feet. And Michelle Yeoh's character walks in and Jamie Lee Curtis is doing a mad piano solo with her tootsies because they obviously can't use the hands.
I must have zoned out. I must have.
My favourite thing about the film is the hot dog hands. I forget about the toes.
Yeah.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. Honestly, it's such a... Fill me so much with knowledge. It was coming out my ears, nose and everything.
It is.
All of the time.
It's almost aggressive with its pacing and with the different universes and what's happening. I think that's the point. I think it tries to go above and beyond to portray the fact that everything, everywhere is all happening at once.
Which is not an enjoyable experience if you suffer from anxiety or you have that metropia, whatever it's called, where you don't like to hear too much, which I think I have.
I have both of those things. It's not, I don't wear that like a badge of honour, but I'm just being honest. I have both those things. But the film never made me feel anxious or irritated by sound.
You've got a special parking bay for your soul.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. But I just liked, I enjoyed the spectacle of it, the sheer scale of it, the madness. Like, I think this film lives and dies by the individual's willingness to embrace it. If it starts and you're like, this is a bit too much, this is too, it's too much going on, this is overbearing, you're going to have a bad time. If you go in and it starts, you're like, oh, hang on, this is mental. I'm here for it. Then I think you'll appreciate it.
I admire people that enjoy it and took great value in it because it's great because it shows a lovely divide between individuals. Like for me personally, I cannot see how someone could go through that whole film and not just want to switch off or your mind just like wanders.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to realism, sorry, the hot dogs, they would have depreciated. They would have decomposed and fallen off their fingers.
That's your problem.
It annoyed me a little, yeah. I mean, start off with hot dog fingers.
What, so through wear and tear, they would break and whittle down, is that what you're saying?
Have you ever handled a Frankfurt?
I've handled a Frankfurt.
They're so limp. They just break really easy. You just pop that dog. The minute she touched Jamie Lee Curtis, they should have both been eating sausage meat.
And even though you liked the hot dog finger...
I love its introduction.
You weren't there for the fact that it wasn't realistic to keep them as your fingers.
No, I was reiterating a point where you said, I love realism. I would have liked it if the sausages would have fallen apart.
Okay.
A little while they were doing stuff and they just kept, I don't know, I was about to say growing back and I thought that wouldn't work.
Okay.
Wouldn't work, man.
Is there anything else you liked about the film?
I didn't even know Jamie Lee Curtis was in this until I started it, obviously. I liked her as an IRS officer because you don't see her in a lot of films anymore, unless it's Halloween 20 or Trading Places back in the day. And I loved her in, what was the Arnie film? True Lies. Yeah, I always liked Jamie Lee Curtis. And it was so weird to see her as this like older sort of grandma almost, working in an office with a little pot belly and just looking a bit ragged. And I actually do think I would have loved this to have been about her and Yeo having, like, trying to help her with her taxes and having sympathy for her. That's me wanting this film to be serious. Jeez Louise. Yeah. Very entertained up until about that point, I think, 35 minutes, just after Yeo gets up and leaves and Jamie Lee Curtis starts to walk towards her at the elevator. This is in the early part of the film. One thing I did like, there's some well-written comedy in it, and there's a scene, I have to quote it because it really made me laugh. Is it James Hong's character, Gong Gong, or I call him Lo Pan from Big Trouble Little China. He has his family, you know, when they're trapped in the cupboard, and he calls like some randomers to like come into the room and help him get them out. And he says, your time is up, find your jumping pads. And then like eight people in the room just start performing like what appears to be like a workshop scene from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Yeah. They're licking walls, they're sitting on toilets, one's going, car, car, one's going, Ave Maria. I was dying. It's just the way it goes, get on your jumping pads.
Yeah, and they the just madness in shoes, yeah.
It's weird. I definitely turned away a lot in this film. it's so weird. It's such an overdrive of sound, noise, visuals, and I was like that. But occasionally, a little comedic scene would get me. Hot dog fingers, jumping pads, people eating chapstick and that to find something in the universe.
It's yeah.
Maddeningly weird.
I think that scene you speak of, it had one of my favourite little snippets. There's a guy humping a lamp in the background.
Yes.
Going really out.
Yes. The security guard.
He loves lamp.
He loves lamp.
I love lamp. He loves lamp.
He humps it in front of another guy who's just doing a pelvic thrust in a suit.
Yeah.
See, I love randomness. Yeah. I find that comedic. But they're hidden amongst all that sort of madness.
I think you're right when you say you don't stand alone with this feeling of almost being overwhelmed. It's like it is like an avalanche of randomness, isn't it? It's relentless, it's continuous, and for 2 hours and 20 minutes it can be a bit exhausting because it comes at you so thick and fast.
Yeah.
That you just, it's one thing to be asked to leave believability at the door, like whether or not you're willing to do that's a different matter. There's one thing to do that, but when there's so much surreal shit going on in the forefront, in the background, it can be a lot.
Yeah.
And I've seen it three times now.
Oof.
And each time I see it, and I watched my second and third viewing were days apart, and you find something different every time because there's so much going on.
But now, you see, it's not because it's layered, though. Like, sometimes you can watch a layered film and see things that you didn't notice the first time around. This will inevitably be the case for this forever.
Well,
you will always see something new in this film.
See, it's interesting you say that because one of my main things I like about it is something that's sort of substance-based. And I find the film oddly moving. Considering the film is this balls-to-the-wall bonkers mayhem, there is this emotional heft that focuses on a fractured mother-daughter relationship. Everything Everywhere All at Once also manages to weave in this profound message about enjoying the now, not stressing about what you can't control, and being truthful about who you are. And I find the whole thing a decent balance between chaos and clarity.
So many easier ways to portray that and get that across.
Yeah, but I think it's quite masterful to be able to have this sort of almost subplot, subtext of this family dynamic and the struggles of being mortal that we all have, and then having this just bonkers bonanza that's happening all the time.
The only subplot I steeved out was that she doesn't accept her daughter's sexuality. That was the only one I could see. And her drive for keeping a successful laundrette going, Kei Hui Kwan's character wanting to get a divorce.
Yeah.
I didn't see, but that subtext is very evident at the very start of the film. Anything else late, I'm just like, well, it's just repeating that thing.
Yeah.
That the daughter with the attacking jewel-wielding dildos wants to be accepted by her mum.
Yeah.
And how it's like a generational thing. Like if your parent didn't show you love, you probably won't show love, or you might become a bit distorted.
Mm.
All hokum, bro.
Mm. Mm. Maybe if you did watch it again down the line, I've got a feeling you probably won't. But if you do, you might pick up on these more profound moments. Okay, well, asked and answered.
I watched it once, tried it again. So I've done it once in 20 minutes. It's a 2 hour, 12 minute film, I think.
2 hours 20, but
2 hours 20. Yeah. So I've done 2 hours 40 minutes.
Yeah,
I couldn't, man.
I I assumed because it's been
2 hours,
because it's been nominated for 11 Oscars. It was one of those things that I thought, well, everybody loves this film, and I've seen it with my partner. I've spoken to a few other people within the film community on social media. Well, I'm getting to the point. Like, it's interesting to hear that your peoples are out there too. There are people out there, like you read up on it. There's a lot of people out there that have the same issues as you. And if I look at it sort of objectively, I can kind of get it, because it is an onslaught of madness. And it never centres on one thing. It's not a linear time frame. The film sets out to be madness, and it is madness. You're going to struggle with it pretty early doors if you don't buy into that.
Well, it's not that. It's if you drink more, your tolerance for alcohol goes up, hence you drink more. You watched a lot of Marvel films, a lot of multiverse theorem. I never did. So your tolerance for it is a lot higher than mine.
Perhaps. There's probably an air of truth about it.
But it's the only reason I can think, you know, this huge film fans and critics have got time for it, because it takes a lot of this multiverse stuff that's been getting rammed down our throat for the last 10 years, and they see more of an Oscar-looking film amongst this multiverse theory. So MCU will never get an Oscar nomination, and it never bloody should. But this film, I think they're like, oh, look, they've taken something that's really odd and spectacular, and it's very multiverse, and it could potentially be an Oscar film. I don't know. I feel like there's a whiff of herd mentality going on with this movie.
You reckon?
Yeah.
See, I'll go on to this in more detail when I talk about the things I don't like. And I do tend to agree with you. While I it sounds like I enjoyed this film a lot more than you did, I don't agree that it should be nominated for Oscars. I applaud the ambition, and I enjoy the madness of it all. I find it enjoyable and fascinating to sit there and just escape into this many world chaos. It's just relentless, and I'm there for it. I do like it.
Mm.
But when I heard this was Oscar nominated, I was a bit like, well, it is a good film. I enjoyed it. I'd definitely watch it again. But does it deserve to win? I mean, best picture, best director.
That's changing now, though. It's all changing. It used to be very severe dramas that would be usually get the Oscar nods, like There Will Be Blood and My Left Foot and Dances of Wolves, etc., because they were speaking to something bigger, and it was a much more thought out film, and it was more about human emotion and the talent behind it. But there's a big community now that are looking for Oscars to cover all types of films, musicals and stuff for best picture, or like a best actor for an animation or something. It will eventually just be everything. You can have everything in a category.
Do you not think that's good, or would you prefer the Oscars to stay as this prestige award where it highlights the best in dramatic?
I think it lessens, like a, let's say, like a Champions League. If American teams are playing in it and Australian teams, it's no longer European Cup. I think it lessens its prestige.
If the quality's lesser.
Yeah.
So if the stories aren't as profound and moving and sort of, well, imagine relatable.
Where Cats is in for best film.
Well, I don't.
And you know full well.
To be part of that, yeah, world.
But you know full well it's not. It's not worthy of the accolades.
Mm.
I still think Oscars should be every 4 years, and it should literally be. You can't just have
like a World Cup.
It should be so prestigious. But Oscars is yearly, just like the Globes and Tonys, etc. So I think if the Oscars can't be that level of quality, where it's like, you know, we're looking at Moonlight for best picture. You know, a film where it's challenging people's opinions on like homosexuality and race and everything. A film that's powerful.
Yeah.
You know, if like Cats and Black Panther is up for Oscars, I'm just like, I'm not really watching the Oscars anymore. Because I'm like, if you're watching Black Panther and you want it to win an Oscar, this is nothing to do with race, religion or anything. This is to do with, I feel now I need to go and watch 28 films.
Because it's part of a bigger picture, the Marvel universe.
How can you have one and not the other? It's not a standalone film. It doesn't matter if it is a standalone film. Yeah. By definition, it's not.
I think the Oscars, the Academy, certainly needed to sort of refresh their itinerary in what they look for films, because a lot of the people that make the decisions within that industry are your older white men. I mean, that's fact.
Well, it's also scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Well, and a lot of that is taken up by white actors, directors, stuff.
Exactly that. So I do think there needed to be a wind of change when it comes to the Oscars. I do tend to agree with you when you say, well, they are kind of lessening the prestige if everything can be included in it. I think there's got to be a balance between the two, and I'm hoping one day that they'll reach that. It doesn't have to be this sort of prestige drama films. It doesn't have to be this wacky, outlandish. It can be an area in between. And listen, I really enjoy Everything Everywhere All at Once. Would I have it in my top 10 of the year? Absolutely not. Would I have it Oscar nominated for any of the 11 that it is? To be honest, probably not. There's a lot more substantial, thought-provoking films out there. And while I like it, I don't necessarily agree with that. So I do tend to agree with you.
It might be something that over time has to change. Like maybe I'll get used to the idea, maybe in 10, 11 years, that Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio is going to get best picture, not best animation or anything. I just feel like it's going that way.
Yeah.
Where it'd be like, well, why can't an animation be best picture? Why does it have to come under animation? Like I think Wolf of Wall Street, when it was nominated, was under musical or comedy, which is a category, musical comedy.
Yeah. That's strange. You'd have it as comedy, not music.
I'd just have it as
musical.
I'd have it if it was nominated. I would just still have it as best picture.
Yeah.
For the way it's filmed, the plot. I'd base it on the performances and how much, you know, it's worthy of a best picture, I think. Even if it doesn't win, I just don't think it was a musical comedy.
I think the Academy and the Oscars, they're in this transitional period, and we'll only see which direction they're going to take within the next few years. You can tell that they're trying to evoke change. They're trying to promote change within the industry. And I think that's a good thing. But I think it's about finding that balance between absurd cinema and really gut-wrenching drama pieces without it being an extreme version of one or an extreme version of the other. Say, like, all the positive things for Everything Everywhere All at Once, I'm not sitting there afterwards like deeply thinking about what I've just witnessed. It's not in my head days after like there are with other films that have been released. So I think they've got to find that sort of common ground, that neutral territory where both can sort of coexist without leaning towards a sort of old school drama pieces in these wacky, absurd multiverse motion pictures. I think there is an area and they just need to find that level.
I think they need rebranding now. Globes and Oscars, they need a new name and a new event, and it needs to be it shouldn't be every year, because I know you can bang out 100 films a year and loads of people in contention for it, but you know, a film is masterful if after 4 years it is still in your mind and you're still thinking about it in terms of its performance and stuff. So if that's up for an Oscar and it's give it four years and we have time to actually think about it and not rush it. But I think both of them they've become too part of mainstream media and been politicized due to race and everything now, and they're losing their effect for me.
Yeah,
most definitely.
I think that's fair. I also love the cast of the film. For a movie as far-fetched as this one to be successful, you need every single cast member to be rowing in the same direction. I think Michelle Yeoh is incredible. Ke-Huy Quan is adorable. Stephanie Hsu is layered, and Jamie Lee Curtis is hilarious. Each performance is a result of this fully committed cast, and even those with tiny roles fully buy into the batshit crazy narrative. And I like that. I thought everyone that had, even the leading names in this and the ones that I wouldn't even know the actors' names, I think every one of them bought into what the Daniels were selling, and I think it works as a result of that.
You know, James Hong, he's done over 650 films.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Lo Pan from Big Trouble Little China. And I was reading about how in 1952, 53, he was born in the US, how he joined the army, and he ended up in the what they call special service entertainment. So you're a part of the army, but it's your job to entertain the soldiers, put on shows, skits, sing songs, etc. And he was in the US Army entertaining soldiers at Camp Rucker, Alabama. And he reflected on that experience and how it saved his life. May I quote?
Go for it.
He said, Hong reflecting on his experience and how it may have saved his life not going to Korean War. I do not know if I would have liked to go to war in Korea, but let's admit it. With a GI cap and this face charging at the Korean army, the Koreans would try to kill me. But then, if I were to retreat and I turned around and ran back, the Americans would try to kill me too, because they would think I'm an enemy in disguise. I definitely think I would have been shot from one side and the other.
What a quote.
Amazing, isn't it?
And to be honest, he's spot on.
Yeah, of course. If you're like an 18-year-old kid from New Jersey and you're in a war and you see a guy running at you and he's got Oriental features and he's got a GI uniform on and he's running in fear of his life, you'd probably pop him.
Yeah.
He'd be like, spy! Oh, just brilliantly at the foresight for that. But he was such a good performer. They actually asked him to stay at Camp Rucker and entertain soldiers that were about to go to war, rather than go and fight a war.
What a gig that would be.
Yeah, because you would have thought in that time, like 52, 53, that America being quite an unaccepting time of different races and religions at the time, you'd think he would have been frontline.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a great story. And it's brilliant, a brilliant insight into him as a person. But yeah, he's one of the most prolific actors still living today, up there with Christopher Lee. We think he's done 600 plus.
That's amazing. Yes. What a man.
Yeah,
what I a haven't man. Seen a lot of his work, but from that story alone and his performance as Gong Gong in this,
yeah.
I think he's a cool dude.
He's just Lo Pan for me. He always will be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Final thing I liked about it is hot dog hands, dildo duels, confetti combustion and butt plug battles. I mean, what a list. Everything Everywhere All at Once is every inch as weird as that sentence sounds.
Inch.
Why, what?
You said dildos and butt plugs, so inch matters, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How much you can take.
It does. Relevant. A medley of multiversal madness, I admire the ambition and congratulate the chaos. Now, say what you want about the film. I know you're clearly not its biggest fan. It's safe to say that. But do you at least admire just the madness, man? Like the director's thinking all of this shit up.
I saw a South Park episode once and they break into Family Guy headquarters to see how the show's made. And there's all these ideas put into a swimming pool. It says something like Bowie, stars, chocolate, cat, explosion. And they use manatees to go and pick up these forks and put them in a machine. That's this for me.
Okay.
You could just sit there and think of anything. As I'd be really funny, the hot dog hands and stuff. Like, let's forego all of that brilliant idea that films have been for 100 years, these rules, these things they stick by, these commandments about pacing and plot and story and grasping your audience, get traction with them. No, let's throw 10 ton of lube at it so no one can catch it and just be like, oh, it's mad, it's mad. It's like having an LSD trip. I'm looking at all the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. Oh, do weed and watch this. Oh, it's one of the maddest films. One person put, I actually cried. It was so touching. And I was like, I can't think what they're talking about.
I mean, that's a bit overkill. I enjoy the film. I didn't sit there crying, didn't stand up slow clapping at its
I just feel unintelligent. I couldn't see through the madness to whatever chocolatey cherry center this film's supposed to have that everyone's loving. And I was actually kind of sad and annoyed I didn't like it, because I was sort of sitting there thinking, what am I not getting?
Mm.
And I tried, man. I tried so hard.
I've had that sense of feeling like you haven't been invited to the party when everyone loves a film and you're watching it and go, am I missing something? Like, I know what that feels like. Mm. I mean, in the instance of this film, I certainly enjoyed it. I don't adore it as the armies of those out there that love this do, but I certainly would say it was an enjoyable film. I was entertained through the three times I've seen it. But, I mean, you've got your people out there who completely disagree. And I think that is, in essence, the beauty of
cinema. They are a minority. It's a lot harder to find people that aren't rating this above 90% or 7 out of 10 anywhere online. Mm. Everyone's raving about it. But there are, I'm guilty of it. I typed in, is it me or is just everything everywhere all at once shit? And I found a few guys and girls out there that were of the same mind. And I wanted to message them, start a community and a hate group. But no one was in, man.
No, well, maybe one day everyone will catch up. So it sounds like you've got a few things you didn't like about them. Can you go into the specifics?
Okay. I wrote this down. This whole film for me is a virtual reality experience for someone wanting to experience Alzheimer's. Come on.
I don't know if anyone wants to experience Alzheimer's.
It's jumping, it's moving. One minute you think you're in a movie about the laundrette and how she's struggling, she's trying to keep this machine running, and then it just jumps to something insane. It's like 10 days has gone ahead and you've totally forgot why it even happened. I'm constantly, like, you could miss the entire middle of this film and miss absolutely nothing.
Credit where credit's due, it is discombobulating. It is.
I can't even say that word, but whatever it was trying to be, whatever it was trying to convey, ADHD, nervous breakdown, acceptance to marginalised community or sexuality, is lost for me in a showcase of filmmaking techniques and dildos and butt plugs.
So it was all show, no substance?
Yeah.
Do you think?
For me it was. Yeah. It was the Harlem Globetrotters. They're not beating the Chicago Bulls, but they're jumping on trampolines and wearing like wigs and stuff.
Yeah.
Actually good.
Listen, I'll be honest, I respect you for saying it, because it would have been very easy for you to see the sort of background noise. You look at the ratings on IMDb, you see everyone, the majority of the people enjoying this film. It would be very easy for you to sort of disillusion yourself and be like, oh, well, everyone else says it's good, so I've got to say it good. Kind of like how I feel the reception to Prey was. Like, everyone seemed
to
love
it.
I watched it and I was like, are you all on crack? Because this film is bang average for me. Like, it doesn't breathe this new lease of life into a franchise that the majority of people are saying. So I do think you should be applauded for standing up, fist in the air, and go, you know what? Everything Everywhere All at Once wasn't for me. Because you could easily just be like, oh, yeah, it's good.
There's one, obviously, you know my mind on Inception. I find that very similar.
Mm.
There's some die on the hill fans of Inception that just laud it as an incredible film. But both films, for me, are guilty of not allowing their audience to take traction with what's happening. And it's nothing's earned. I'm supposed to care at the very start of Inception, very start of Everywhere All at Once. You know, I'm along for the journey. And I didn't feel like that. I felt like I had crutches and I missed the train. And every other bastard's waving and sticking their fingers up at me. But it's annoying because I don't find all high concept films or confusing films are intelligent or marbled with like consciousness.
Okay.
I don't find them, they're not all like that. Sometimes they're just mad for madness sake. That's what I took from this.
I mean, I took a bit more from this than you did. I've picked up on a few I've searched and found as a result of my searching more profound messages. Whether or not people agree with me or not, that's up to them. But
I'm proud of anyone that can watch it and enjoy it. I think it's amazing that you had that concentration.
Yeah,
that you could put up with the overload of everything, audio, visual, everything.
For me, I watch so many films, too much perhaps. Even as a cinephile, I'm probably guilty of spending too much of my time watching movies.
Yeah, whereas I'm not.
I love it. So when I see a film comes out, regardless of how hard it is to follow, regardless of how noisy, how frantic it is, when I'm watching something on screen that I haven't seen before, it immediately, it piques my interest because I'm like, oh, well, okay, what? To try and jump to another universe, you're jumping in the air and trying to get your anus on a Employee of the Month trophy. I've not seen that.
Don't get me wrong, that's a lot better. You've sold that to me more than if someone said to me, Annette. Like,
yeah, Annette I can't tolerate. There is no excuse for Annette.
So Annette gave me a headache.
Yeah.
Actually gave me a headache. The monotone singing, the drab faces, no one smiling. For me, it's a piece of shit film. Hot trash.
And it's worth saying that film is
Warm Juno.
Highly regarded by
Empire,
a lot of people.
Five stars.
Yeah, I'm with you in that camp. I know we differ on our views for Everything Everywhere All at Once, but certainly I'm in that boat with you for Annette.
Yeah.
I thought it was hot shit. I'm more than happy to have a conversation and a debate with someone if my opinion and their opinion of the film differs. I mean, that's why we're doing this film podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's those people that act personally offended if you don't like a film they like. They're like, oh, you didn't get it, you're wrong. It don't matter if I got it. It don't matter if you think I'm wrong. This is how I feel about it. Don't act butthurt because I don't like a film you like. That's ridiculous. Ridiculous. Films are subjective. Like, 10 people can watch one film and one out of the 9 could hate it and the other 9 could love it. It could go the other way. And that's the beauty of cinema. I'll never understand why people act so offended.
I saw one guy on Twitter yesterday. He put a photo up of Mad Max Fury Road and he just put, is it me or is it a highly overrated film?
It's you.
It probably is him. I know we just said that everyone's entitled to opinion, but I did put...
let's crucify this
I put like, wow. Yeah, I said, I'd love to hear you elaborate on that point. I wasn't attacking him. And then I put in a little feed to Mad Max Fury Road. He was like, I don't have to watch or listen to anything or explain myself. I wasn't attacking him. And he was just like, he said, it's great. It's just overrated. I was like, you just said it's great. You can't then say it's overrated.
You could
say it's average.
Yeah.
But he couldn't offer any... thing to support his argument because there's too much good stuff going on in that film, barring obviously a diva on set, etc. But the physical undertaking of it, which, you know, a lot of people talk about, but I was surprised that he didn't want to offer any reason as to why, whereas of me and you sit down, we offer reasons as to why we dislike or like it.
Yeah.
If you could prove me wrong, like if someone said to me, look, I'm going to explain everywhere, everything all at once to you and then give it another go, I'd certainly try it, but I can't promise you I'll go beyond 20 minutes.
No.
Yeah.
No, I think your willingness to do that and to be proven wrong, I think that shows a strength of character. I also think it shows a strength of character to stand by your opinion and almost fight for it, because most people, I think, would hear this and hear you be a little bit down on it and be like, oh, I can't believe you thought that, because common consensus does seem to be fairly positive. So props to you for standing your ground.
People that smell their own farts.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Everyone loves the smell of their own brand.
Nah, people that love Annette, I think, smell their own farts.
Oh, yeah. And jar them.
Oh.
And label them and document them like vintage wine.
I'm only joking, guys. You love what you love. I love what I love, eh?
Look at you trying to be friendly.
Eh?
You lie. I see the lies behind those dead eyes.
Oh, God.
Anything else you didn't like, or shall I move on to what I didn't?
Nah, you move on, man. You're going for that, dog.
Well, Same as you, it's just hard to follow. Listen, I know the film is more about madness than it is about plot, but with so much going on and these things happening at such a fast pace, I couldn't help but feel lost in the ether of energy on more than one occasion. The switching between multiverses, the motive of some of the characters, and the level of acceptance from people realising that there's infinite versions of themselves, it did bother me a little. But not enough to not enjoy the whole final product. It did. I've watched it 3 times, and I can't sit here and I couldn't offer you a thesis on what the film's trying to say and mean. I've got my theories, and I've got some points that it's trying to...
Seven hours.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's huge. 7 hours.
Yeah, but I think it's testament to the film if I can sit there and watch it 3 times and not be disheartened or dislike it. I do like it, but it's so fast paced. There's so many moving parts that I think if you're being honest with yourself, I don't think you're meant to fully understand it. And I think if you're being cynical like I am to find dislikes, I think the flagging point could be like, well, I was lost on a lot of it. And I don't think that even the Daniels can sit there and explain the sort of scientific theory behind multiverse. It's not that film. It's not a Nolan escapade where he's got the science to back up his theories. It's just madness.
Well, Tenet was madness.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll never understand it. I think it's I can track with it better than this. Mm. Enjoy it more. It's more my type of film, I suppose.
Yeah.
The Daniels, did you the other film they did, Swiss Army Soldier? Man.
Swiss Army Man, yeah.
Did you like that?
I did.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
I feels that if you didn't like this, you might not like Swiss Army Man. It's not deep rooted in anything like the multiverse or something, but it's about this sort of lonely, isolated guy who finds a corpse and then starts a friendship.
Paul Dano.
Yeah, and Daniel Radcliffe is the corpse.
Body.
Yeah, and it's. I think it's easier to find deeper meanings about like loneliness and isolation and the wanting of camaraderie and friendship and feeling isolated and all of those very normal human things we have. I think it's certainly easier to find the messages in a film like that than a film as mental as this. But if you have an issue with realism, then you might... I don't know if it's the filming style and techniques that you didn't like from this, as well as the bonkersness of it all, then I think you might struggle with it. But I liked it. I like both the films. I'd probably say Swiss Army Man's a better film than Everything Everywhere All at Once, but I'd probably be in the minority.
Okay.
Yeah. The other thing I disliked about it, we've touched on it. It is overhyped. I'll probably get slated for this, but I don't think Everything Everywhere All at Once is the masterpiece that many are making it out to be. It is ambitious, avant-garde filmmaking that is original, entertaining, but if I'm being entirely honest, it's not. I don't think it's...
I think it's revolutionary.
Oscar nominations, no. I don't think so.
I think Matrix did this ages ago, and then I felt that way with Inception. I was like, it's kind of been done, man. Like, the revolutionary one was Matrix for me. I'm not saying I love Matrix, I'm not saying it, but it was the first one to offer this jumping between different, not universes, but different beings. Like, oh, I was unconscious, now I'm conscious.
Yeah.
And et cetera. And then I feel like anything that comes after it now is lesser impactful.
I think what The Matrix has going for it that a film like this doesn't, and most of the Marvel entries don't, is that it was ahead of its time in terms of the technology and the scale and the spectacle of it. You think of the slow motion, iconic thing where Neo's going back to avoid...
Body jumping.
Yeah. Like, it was ahead of its time. And for 1999, it doesn't seem that long ago, but it is decades now. I think it should be applauded for that. Whereas Everything Everywhere All at Once, like you say, it's kind of been done before. Nothing really revolutionary. And that's from someone who enjoyed it.
The only thing that's revolutionary about it, I think, is what you were mentioning at the start about the 9 guys doing the guys and girls doing the VFX.
Yeah.
That's what was revolutionary about it. But it almost looked like they were testing out a biro in the film. Make the head blow up with confetti.
Yeah.
Like, they literally just got let loose. Go have fun, kids. It's a soft play. That's what it was like.
Yeah, I do get what you're saying. I've got some questions if you're interested.
See.
Imagine the multiverse theory is real. If there were infinite Harrys doing infinite Harry things, what would be the reality in which you would like to experience most? And what would be the worst possible reality that you could imagine yourself in?
Can I massage myself?
in a world where you can be anything and everything, you would just want to massage yourself.
Yeah, could I message someone in another galaxy and massage me? Because I've always been of the mind that I would give myself the best massage. If I could be behind myself with my own hands, rubbing my own self and in feeling the massage, I'd love that, because no one can massage me well enough. Partner's crap at it. No offense. You can pay for it. And I'm like, I've got a knot like in my calf. They miss it. They go past it. I'm like, no, I want to massage myself.
You never cease to amaze me. You've got one of the most imaginative, innovative brains that I've ever met. And in a world where you can, any Harry can be anything, you want to be massaged by another Harry.
I think a lot of people have thought I'd give myself the best massage. Lots of people must have thought this.
So you wouldn't be in a world where you're a multi-billionaire, saving lives with a new treatment that will cure all illnesses? No, because that would be normal.
What I'm saying is, if I'm a billionaire in another universe, even if I body swap or I become that one, that's my normal life. So even in that world, I could then think, okay, well, let's go to the other universe where I'm a crab man. But then once I'm there, I'm like, oh, I'm a crab man. This is my normal life. You don't know of the other ones.
So yours is aware? I didn't give the question that much thought.
Sorry.
But I like that you have. Listen, again, like most of these questions I ask you, I have an idea of my head how you might answer. And 9 times out of 10, I'm so far away from what you actually say.
Imagine it, man.
So if the multiverse theory is real, the universe you'd like to see yourself in is where you can call upon another Harry to massage you.
Mm.
That's wicked.
Yeah.
Okay.
Feel it, and, do it, love it.
Okay. And least favorite or what would be the worst possible reality you would find yourself in?
Where I'm sexually owing to my dad. That would be the worst.
Fucking
hell. Because if everything's possible, there's one out there.
Jesus.
Where Christ. I'm my dad's bitch.
Okay. All right. That would be a horrible reality for anyone, wouldn't it?
Terrible.
Again, I was not expecting that. Can I tell you what mine would be?
Please.
Mine are pretty basic compared to your ones. I wouldn't want to be in a universe where I massage myself. Mine would be just super successful podcaster.
No.
Pretty basic. Yeah, man, fuck it.
You could be an astronaut.
Yeah. You could be anything. You just want to massage your own feet.
I know, but you've offered something where you're a super successful podcaster, whereas you could be an astronaut or a rock star.
Well,
I'm like, no, I just massage.
I hope to be a successful podcaster one day. So in a universe, I would have realised that ambition, and that's quite nice for me.
What's the word for that when you put something out there? You put it into the universe.
Manifestation.
Maybe something like that. Jim Carrey putting £1 million check next to his bed every night when he had nothing.
Well, maybe that's what I'm doing now on the sneaky. Maybe I'm saying, in an alternate universe, I'd like to be a successful podcaster, hoping that the universe is like, what's that, mate? You want to be a successful podcaster? Here, boom, 50,000.
Eat some chapstick and put in a Bluetooth and you might get it.
Oh, maybe. Do you want to hear my worst possible reality?
Yeah.
Imagine a world that is ruled by human-sized spiders.
Oh, God.
And I am part of a clan of the only existing humans. And if I want to survive, I have to go out and try and like find food and stuff.
So
and everything out there.
Planet of the spiders.
But instead of like a zombie vibe where if you get bit by one, you turn into a massive spider.
They just eat you.
Yeah. And I thought about this when I thought about this question, and I went on a deep dive about that world and I started thinking, oh, fuck, wouldn't it be horrible?
And I just had a horrible thought of the legs coming through the food hatch.
Mate.
Just the legs, because you know what they do? They put their legs in first and then they bring their body through.
Yeah. I'll be out on a nice country walk and I'll be like, oh, imagine a 60 foot spider came over that building and
Lord
I'm
looking
at it like I'm like, oh God, it's going to happen. So yeah, that'd be mine.
Just if it's like too big, it becomes stupid. If it's, like you said, human sized, like, you know, 4.5 foot off the ground, but quite wide, like a car doing it down the street, but something that's like a big pine tree, that's too big. That's not even a joke.
Terrifying.
It's not though, because
it's
you
not.
Could no, because you could just jump on its leg and hold its leg, and it would be like, what's on my leg?
Well, we'd be what spiders are to us. How spiders are to us. Don't touch my foot by accident when we're talking about spiders. I'll fucking bottle you. Next question. Would you rather have hot dog fingers or googly eyes?
In the film, the googly eyes like on her forehead.
Yeah, you know those plastic...
Are you saying my actual eyes?
Yeah, so you can't see. So you've got googly eyes. Or you've got hot dog fingers, so you can't pick anything up. You can't play guitar.
Always been told I've got nice eyes, but I've got small fingers. So I'll take the hot dog fingers.
Who's told you you have small fingers?
A few people over 20 years.
Let me see your fingers.
They're little small, aren't they?
They're not freakishly small.
No one was shouting about it at college. They were like, oh, you've got little fingers and stuff.
Okay. I think I'd probably go hot dog fingers as well.
You guys.
Yeah.
At least you can sniff your own fingers and be like.
And if it's like the ones in Everything Everywhere All at Once, you're never going to run out of condiments.
No. Oh, God. Yeah.
Just catch up on tap.
Strangely sexualized film as well. Let's not go back into it.
Yeah, what a point to leave it on. What would you rate Everything Everywhere All at Once out of 10?
I have to go with how it made me feel.
Go with your feels, man.
It's 3.5.
What?
Yeah, it's a bad film.
That's very low.
I can't stand it. I can't stand it. And I've been worried about saying it because I know some people. Luckily, obviously, we don't put these scores, say, online or visual for anyone. They have to find out by listening to the episode. But yeah, if it would have been that low and you could see it before pressing play, I probably would have changed it because I'd be worried that people think, oh, they don't even like it, so they're not going to listen to it. But remember, it's an individual score and it's just, I can't take.
From speaking about this with you, this
don't adjust episode, your score now.
Oh, I would never good. Yield to you. I would never
don't adjust
yield
your
to
score
you.
To try. And, yeah,
never.
Because I thought you'd
I'm
be
outraged at the thought that you think I would do that.
I
would never change. I will never change for you.
I was worried that you would up your score, thinking that film buffs out there wouldn't respect you if it was a low.
Can you stop
combined score?
Insulting me for no reason, please? I've got integrity. Damn it, integrity.
Look, that weren't my dog.
That's fair.
I didn't have a hose and pipe to go clean it because it ain't my dog. Never will be.
All right. Well, it's obvious I liked it more than you. I would have given it, I will give it a 7.5 out of 10.
That weren't your original score.
It was my original score.
Bullshit.
What? Why 7. Would I like?
7.5?
Yeah, 7.5. Hey, Leo.
That's high.
It's already written there.
That's high.
How dare you?
Okay.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
I thought you were going to go 6.5.
Nice.
And I was really looking forward to this one being below 10.
Well, I think that would be really harsh. So, yeah, I'm a little bit dumbfounded that you went that low. I thought it would be 5. I thought you would go 5. 3.5 feels a little bit harsh, but listen, I'm not digging you out for your opinion. That's your opinion.
It took me 4 hours to watch it the first time.
Okay, that's a...
How can I possibly give that 5?
That's a you problem. That's fine. You've given your score and I respect it. I think you're wrong, but I respect it.
Can't be wrong.
That gives Everything Everywhere All at Once a total score of 11 out of 20.
Deserves it.
If you like your films to be manic, mental, and mildly maddening, or if you have ever imagined what it would be like if you put everything on a bagel, then Everything Everywhere All at Once could be a film for you.
It wouldn't taste good.
No, obviously not. I couldn't eat anyway if it's got wheat in. Anyway, consider watching this one if you enjoyed Doctor Strange Into the Multiverse, Swiss Army Man, and Cloud Atlas. Should we play a game?
Si, senor.
The game in question is What the Plot, where the rules are simple and the results quite the opposite. Harry will conceive an original idea from his big and beautiful brain and give birth to a plot. It is then down to me to nurture this thought by providing a film title, genre, cast, and anything else I can think of to raise this brainchild into a fully functioning film concept. Over to you, Harry.
This one wasn't directly on the spot. It actually came to me whilst I was lathering up with soap in the shower this morning.
With your baby fingers.
My little baby fingers. Yeah, so I was thinking about it and I thought, that'd be a really good film. Dark, but I'd really like to see it myself. So I thought I'm going to start treating myself to what the plots that I want to see.
Oh, go on.
So I'll try and go slow to make it nice and clear. I saw it as a 17-year-old Irish land worker girl, very pretty. He's taken as a slave by Viking slavers. So we're talking, what, 7th, 8th century. She endures a terrible journey from the British Isles to, say, Iceland, where Vikings are decolonized, where she's made to serve her captor and his family and is treated like an animal, as, you know, a slave would be. Terrible living. Slave's wife and children die of an unknown disease, and his eye turns to our hero, and he believes he's found life again, and she even acquiesces to his advances. So he's romantically involved for her. He wants to be with her. And she falls pregnant. Time moves forward 10 months. The baby's a month old. The slave is over the moon. Couldn't be happier. And when he returns home one day, he finds his dead infant on the table with a knife protruding from it. The slaver, in shock, falls to his knees. And at this point, our hero appears from behind a door and cuts his Achilles tendons, rendering him immobile. Screaming, he asks her, "How could you do something like this?" And then we go to a flashback from her village when it was raided, and we see that the slaver and his men murdered the children and husband of our hero that she already had made in Ireland before being taken as a slave. So, without killing the slaver, she cuts her own wrist, knowing she could not live with what she had done, to save the infant, to get revenge, and obviously losing her own kids prior to this story starting. And she lets him live with all of it. So she cuts his tendons, his legs are gone, but she's killed his only child that's survived, her own child. And then in the flashback, we see why. We see why she's killed her own child. It's because her kids, when she was taken from Ireland, were murdered, and her husband was killed, and she's made a slave. And her plan then is get this guy romantically, get pregnant, and kill her own kid in front of him.
So she's played the long game.
The long game. She waited as well. She waited a month after for the baby to be born, for him to be like, and I love my family. I've actually found love in a girl that I captured in Ireland.
Did you say that she then kills herself? Or just...
She kills herself because she can't live with killing a child. She's okay. Done it. It's a terrible act, but it was to put what he'd done to her back onto him. And she wouldn't want that baby to live in a life where, you know, it's a part of slavery, or it sees slavery.
Mm.
So, almost like he's lulled into a false sense of this girl, this woman I've captured, treated terribly, but my wife and kids die of a random disease. I mean, it's 8th century. They could have died of a cold. And then she's still there. She's sorting the fire out. She's cooking meals, and he's looking at her, and he starts to get more attracted to her. In the film, it would be an hours long romance, essentially. And then it ends with that just back-breaking reveal. Dead child on the table, knife going through it. He breaks down. She cuts his Achilles. He can't get up and get her. And he's screaming why, and she explains it to him. And then we, the audience, get that lovely flashback of her seeing how she's become this way. But I see her killing herself, and he lives with the pain of it all.
Okay. So I feel for a film like this to work, the audience doesn't see that the Irish girl that's been taken doesn't see that her original family are killed.
No, she's probably being hauled onto the boat.
Yeah.
What's come before is done.
Yeah, so she can be outside the building screaming, as you would imagine someone would be if they're being taken away
or
to be saved.
Deadpan shock.
Okay, so we don't know. Maybe it's a shot of the burning building or something, and she's just being dragged away, and we've got no context for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because they weren't, I mean, it's easy to say Vikings say are evil because they pillaged, but it was normal in them days. Like, everyone was a gross, grotesque person.
Yeah.
And it would be like, slave is a currency. Grab that person. I'll kill the ones we can't take with us, and, you know, rape, pillage, take all the money. So to what he thought was a normal act, got the slave, fall in love with her.
And the guy, the Viking chief, it thinks that through being with this woman that he initially took as a slave, he thinks that their relationship is genuine. And maybe it's almost a Stockholm syndrome. Maybe she does actually start realizing this guy's, he's done terrible, terrible things.
Well, she thinks about it more.
He's actually like a loving husband and father, even though the background of everything that's happened to her is just horrible, dark.
Well, to him and his chaos. Say kind, it's a normal act to pillage and to raid.
Yeah.
And maybe you're right, maybe there is an aspect of her that does start to fall for him, and it's that day where she's just holding her baby and she flashes back to when she held her baby from when she was in Ireland as a land girl, like just a farmer with a family. And that's what makes it go change. Like, she thinks back to when she held her first baby, who she now knows is dead because she witnessed it. And then she just cracks.
Yeah.
Whoosh. Like mummy daddy in Shutter Island kills her kids in the river.
Yeah.
Everything was kind of going well, apparently, by the look of DiCaprio's face.
Yeah.
When he found her in the water.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that's dark.
Yeah, man.
And I like dark.
I was having a shower.
Okay. That's what entered your head. Looking down at your little baby fingers.
Toilet troubles lately. I don't like going in that bathroom. Darkness comes out.
Okay. So, just to recap. It's a 17-year-old land-working Irish girl. Taken slave by Viking folks. Mm, mm. She's taken to Iceland, treated like an animal by this Viking leader.
And his family, yeah.
We're led to believe that she loses her family, taken away as a slave, but we don't know to what extent. The viewer doesn't know.
We don't know she was a mum or a wife.
The film maybe starts with a burning house or her getting dragged onto a boat with other slaves, and the film just starts. And then it's about this relationship between abductee slave woman and the Viking chief and their sort of tumultuous relationship. At start, she obviously is dead against it, fights him, tries to rebel, protest, all these things, but then eventually sort of goes along with it just to try and have some sort of decent life, and then maybe even goes further and almost enjoys her life being the wife of a chief. Mm-hmm. And sort of accepts it, and the audience are sort of led to believe that she's changed her tone, so to speak. She's adapted, this is her life now, and finds value in this chieftain's way of life. Might even be a good bloke that does terrible things, who knows. So yeah, she
the standard was definitely different back then, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah. And then later on she starts a family with this Viking leader and ends up killing the baby out of revenge
to make him feel the way she felt,
and then kills herself as a final nailing the coffin.
Yeah, because she can't live with killing a child.
And then the audience have found out she had everything taken. She had a happy family. She had a happy life.
Well, you see this guy who, in the film, once you see his romance and how warm he can be, but at the end of the film, you see what he did.
So maybe the film, the audience is believed that that she's found a happy life here, then the end of the film, or the audience believe the end of the film is her killing this infant, then killing herself. Then it shows you a flashback and it shows her being happy with her family, and then when the Vikings came.
But he could have beheaded her husband.
Yeah. Set him alight.
Raped. And you see him for what he was. Yeah. Nice two reveals then.
Yeah.
She's nutty. We hate her. She kills a child. But then you see why she did it.
So for a film like this, it's obviously a thriller / horror.
Kind of historical.
Dark
as well.
Historical. So I see directing this Robert Eggers. Sweet. We know he can do it. The Lighthouse. The Northman.
Yeah.
Yeah. He knows what he's doing, clearly. Mm-hmm. And this sort of subject matter, he shows he can
loves it.
Do it. The Witch.
Yeah.
Like that sort of old time, grim just existence. And based on his work with Anya Taylor-Joy in The Witch and in The Northman, I see her as this Irish young woman that's taken away.
The daddy demon
Viking dude I see as
Brendan Gleeson. Scottish
big dude.
Yeah.
Oh, he's Irish.
Brendan Gleeson.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking of Brian Cox. Sorry, yeah. Yes.
Brian Cox would also
work. It's because they're both in like 20 films together.
Yeah, I think Brendan Gleeson, this larger-than-life character, he's got that menacing look. You put a big old beard on him and he's a large, larger-than-life character, just nasty, menacing. But he's done a lot of films recently where he's been a little bit more deep, layered. I think he could just be a real nasty bastard.
Do you think with public opinion and how having to get a bit of eye candy on a film nowadays, i.e. Tom Hardy and Dunkirk and Harry Styles, do you think they'd feel a bit robbed because Anna Taylor-Joy is an extremely attractive woman?
But then
you're Brendan Gleeson in it, and no woman's going to be in there like, oh, I wouldn't mind if he captured me.
But that's the point. It shouldn't be 50 Shades of I would like to get taken by this. But
then should it be Anna Joy? Because she's extremely young and attractive.
But that, I think that from the way you set the story up, I think that works.
Yeah.
You've got
an attractive,
I know what you're saying.
I want your idea.
You could easily have a Tom Hardy type brute that's yeah. like he's this big menacing dude, but he's not too bad on the eyes.
Here,
like,
I bought you a goat's head, my yeah, love.
And they're like, oh, actually. But I think it offers an interesting perspective and layers that she kind of starts having these feelings for him, but the audience don't know that she's got an agenda behind it all.
Mm.
And she's actually just biding her time, waiting for her vengeance. And the vengeance comes in this the most sincerest form of, she's like, you think I'm happy? I've been with you 10 years. I'm going to kill our child and kill myself.
To see that... And a much older actor play that role with a really young actress who's up and coming.
Mm.
That'd be really cool because you don't see it a lot. No. Unless it's like a buddy film.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a replacement father figure. Romantically involved. How amazing. Yeah. What a step for Anna Taylor-Joy to get all slurpy with Gleason.
And I've...
You didn't say Donald Gleason, did you?
No, God. Daddy Gleese.
Yeah.
Daddy Gleese. And so, yeah. It'd be a Robert Eggers film. It'd have Anya Taylor-Joy as the poor Irish land working girl that's been taken by a Viking, Brendan Gleeson. And for the title, I had a few ideas, but I'm just going to call it The Forgotten.
A woman's life is tough. A mother's love is eternal. A wife's patience is incomparable. A woman's vengeance, that is lethal. I won't forgive. I can't forget.
From Robert Eggers, director of The Witch, The Lighthouse, and The Northman.
I know you might not think it, but I have given you a better life than you could have ever had across the ocean. You will learn to love me. You will see me for the god I am. Yes, husband. Whatever you say, husband.
The Forgotten, coming soon to a cinema near you.